On this episode of the Edge Podcast, ClearEdge CEO and founder Leslie Vickery interviews Samira Alamohamed, Vice President and General Counsel of the Americas for S3. Samira shares how her role has changed over her 6 years with the company and offers insights into the legal challenges she and her team are facing as they continue to navigate the COVID-19 pandemic. Samira and Leslie also discuss their shared passion for lifting up other women at work, how we all need to be our own career champions, and how she's finding her own silver linings amid a tough few months. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, and I am the CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing. It brings me great pleasure to have Samira Alamohamed, the Vice President and General Counsel for the Americas with S3 on our podcast, The Edge. Welcome, Samira.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
We were originally introduced through the American Staffing Association mentoring program and quickly realized we have a lot in common, both personally and professionally, and found a lot of ways we could help each other. I would say we became kind of fast friends after one phone call, and I've really just been very grateful to the ASA for having this program and building this relationship with you. So to start though, Samira, you've been with S3 for nearly 6 years. And those not familiar with the company, perhaps just share a little bit of background on who the company is and how you found your way there.
Absolutely. But you know what? Before I begin, I just want to thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I'm a huge fan, and I'm honored to be included amongst individuals like Jeanette Marks, Teresa Carroll, Joyce Russell, just to name a few. I really am honored, and thank you so much.
Of course, honor and pleasure, stars, Samira. You are a great rising star in this industry, and I believe you might be the first general counsel we've had. So excited to have the legal perspective with us here today.
That's great. Well, thank you again. So Specialist Staffing Group is the U.S. division of S3 PLC, which is a U.K. publicly traded company. We specialize in contract and permanent recruitment services in the STEM sector. We're in about 16 countries, a little over 3,000 employees worldwide. In the U.S., you might know us as Progressive Recruitment, Computer Futures, Real Staffing, or possibly Huxley. A little about me and my legal journey to specialist staffing. So right after law school, I was offered a position as assistant general counsel for a very small national staffing firm called Insurance Overload Systems out of Dallas. Within the year, the general counsel left for private practice and I was promoted to general counsel, which was a huge surprise considering my limited legal knowledge. I was truly shocked. But in my new role, you know, I was the only lawyer and I had no choice but to learn on the job. I was exposed to all aspects of staffing, from commercial to operations to legal. I learned so much in that role. I reported directly into the CEO, which I think contributed greatly to my professional growth. Unfortunately, though, after 5 years at IOS, my role ended when they were bought out by a larger staffing firm out of New Jersey. I then moved to Houston and started a position with the CRO, and then actually worked with my husband for a few years when my son was born. And then one day, out of the blue, in 2014, I received a call from a recruiter. And the first thing she says was, "You have staffing experience. Want to go back to staffing?" Turns out specialist staffing was recruiting for a new legal counsel. I didn't hesitate for a moment. I said yes. And 6 years later, here I am.
Right back to the staffing industry. I've been part of this industry for over 20 years. And I have to say, it's something that people, once you're kind of in and you have that opportunity to come back, if you left for any reason, just don't hesitate to jump in. We're in the best place you can be when it comes to helping talent in our worlds. And we also have in common from the husband standpoint, my husband's also a general counsel of a tech company. So it's great to hear your perspective. And I feel like as you're talking about these different things, I'm a little more familiar with it as well. And, you know, Samira, we talked about this before, but with everything happening in our world today, we'd be remiss not to talk about the impact of COVID-19 on our industry. And I can only imagine, again, I hear the stories from my husband and his company, but from a legal perspective, how your role has changed and evolved, especially when it comes to the staffing industry and the type of issues that you're handling. So I have a couple of questions for you on this front. So first, let's just talk about your role for a minute and how it has changed and evolved.
Yeah, definitely. So I've been very fortunate to sit on the U.S. Management Board, even pre-COVID. So my role itself hasn't changed much. However, the type of legal issues I'm dealing with now have definitely increased. Both our global and local teams were pulled together and immediately formed into crisis teams. So, you know, I've had people from, I was asked to participate on the U.S. crisis team, along with my colleagues from HR, sales, TA, and learning and development. It was a very collaborative approach, and we as a crisis team met twice a week and then eventually weekly. We still meet weekly to address any upcoming changes, discussing directives from the global team, and most importantly, how best to support our people, our candidates, and our clients. As for the legal issues, I remember when businesses really started understanding the seriousness of what is COVID-19, lawyers across multiple industries scrambled to review their force majeure clauses. Generally, a force majeure clause is not really a significant clause. I mean, it rarely does anyone negotiate it out or do anything with it. No, but it just became such a huge concern today. So times are changing and how business is being conducted, how people are working. And I think this will give rise to a whole new set of legal issues.
Well, it's great that just from a collaboration standpoint, you are able to partner with your peers in the business. And I love the fact that you already had kind of that strategic seat at the table, so to speak, from your role perspective. I would say one of the things I'm hearing a lot of right now is just people going back to work. So yes, now there's more openness to remote working, but at the same time, people are starting to go back to work. And just looking at kind of how your focus must keep shifting as things evolve and change, especially depending on the type of workers, you know, each staffing company supports. So maybe you could share with us the top priorities you have right now. If you were to rank prioritize, what are the top three things that you're focused on in your role today?
So I've kind of followed our company's lead. S3's number one priority is and has always been our people, both our internal and external employees. Specialist staffing's purpose is bringing skilled people together to build a future. So even our purpose is all about our people. In March, we were able to actually see how focused the company is on its people. So within a very short period of time, our remote working plans were accelerated to ensure employees were able to stay safe and work remotely. To this day, our offices in the U.S. are still closed. We'll only allow people back once we deem it safe and put proper precautions in place. Our CEO and senior leaders of the global business send out daily video updates to keep us informed and connected. It's really amazing to see how a company has come together to support its people. So after my team's well-being, my focus has been staying informed and updated on all the legislative changes due to COVID-19, both at the federal and local levels. There's a lot of information coming our way, and the team's working together to stay on top of it. Pre-COVID, our biggest challenge was this patchwork of legislation. So you can only imagine how much more challenging it is now in the midst of a pandemic. The third focus area for our legal team is to ensure we're supporting our internal stakeholders, our clients, and our candidates. This ranges from conducting contract reviews to supporting HR and employment decisions to advising on collection matters and even advising our clients directly. At the end of the day, we are a business and we want to ensure a thriving business for our people. So really, in summary, my three-part priorities right now are 1, our people, 2, horizon scanning and continuing to be a thought leader in staffing law, and 3, supporting the business so we can continue to thrive.
You have the most organized thoughts, Samira. I feel the attorney in you in a really great way. But you know, you mentioned something. I subscribe to ASA Central, and it's American Staffing Association's network for communicating, and people can post comments and ask questions and just kind of help each other. And I almost every single question, especially at the outset of COVID-19 hitting, was a legal question, whether it be about I-9s or, I mean, you name it, people were asking it and trying to learn and grow from it because a lot of it was kind of new. So when you think of that, I mean, you mentioned 3 top priorities here. The information must be a little bit overwhelming of what you're having to take in and then quickly digest to figure out how that's relevant to your company. What would you say has been, if you can pinpoint your biggest challenge during all of this, what would that be?
I think you nailed it, right? It's these new laws with immediate effectiveness. I think that's the struggle. So legislators put out a new law, it's effective immediately, but then what do you do? There's no guidance. So while I understand the need for new legislation after, you know, these are unprecedented times, I wish it was more time to process and implement. Multiple jurisdictions have enacted their own laws, some of them in conflict with their own state laws. State agencies are releasing guidance way after the law's already been passing is effective. It's actually very frustrating for a lawyer to be asked about a newly enacted law for which there's no guidance available. This is generally why you get lawyers that answer questions with, well, it depends. Glad you raised ASA Central because I see those questions coming through as well. And it's tough because we don't have the answers. We don't know a lot. I mean, even from the PPP program that the government put out to various different legal issues that come up, no one really has answers. It's just kind of let's wait and see and how this goes. And another big challenge is the speed of how quickly things are changing. So we're just getting our hands around office closures and state shutdowns. And now the focus has changed to reopening of offices. It's information overload at a lightning speed.
So lightning speed, information overload, and I have to tell you, even as a, you know, CEO, founder of our company, it's just all we all can do is just try our best to stay on top of everything as it's changing and evolving. I guess one thing I did want to ask you, if we shift gears a little bit, so thank you for sharing that information as it relates to COVID-19. I know oftentimes we did talk about your role a little bit and how people within the company leverage you from a legal perspective. And I know, again, just based on experience, oftentimes in-house counsel is known for working on client contracts or just anything to do with contracts and contract negotiation. And oftentimes you may outsource some of the work to other firms, but your background and experience coming in, it would seem like you would be able to also provide a really strategic value to the company. So I guess with that being said, having that seat in the business and having such a great partnership with other people in the company, even beyond what a traditional GC would see or have, how have you ensured that people kind of see you that way? What have you done to really stand out and be seen beyond even your current role, but as, you know, just an executive and leader at the company?
I think for me, the key thing's been that I've built trust with my internal stakeholders. It didn't come easily or quickly. Honestly, trust comes with time and experience. In my almost 20-year legal career, I faced challenging situations where I had to make quick and sometimes risky decisions. Thankfully, most of them were the right decisions, or, you know, I doubt that we'd be sitting here talking today. In addition to trust, I think I've also, you know, I would say that I've become a thought leader in staffing law. Again, it comes with time and experience. I've been in the industry now for 11 years and learned a few things along the way. I've also listened to others, especially those with more experience and knowledge. So I think all of that put together has allowed me to continue working and really having a strategic position in the business.
So growing up in corporate marketing, a lot of people who listen to the podcast know I got my start in staffing at Interim. Then we merged with Norell and became Spherion, which ultimately was acquired by Randstad. And I remember, you know, coming from a big company, publicly traded, everything we wrote had to go past our legal team for review. And sometimes that can be frustrating. And I'd like to know or understand, you know, how do you balance, Samira, between, I guess, managing compliance and risk while also helping the company be innovative and forward thinking? You want to be seen as that business partner to marketing and HR and the C-suite and everyone involved. How do you personally balance that?
So again, I think the key word is balance, right? Successful in-house attorneys must constantly balance risk and reward. It's very easy to say no. It's very easy to say, nope, can't do it, too risky, and become the no people. But I think the better approach is to analyze the risk and find the best way to mitigate it. The key is to be solutions minded. We have a VP of our business who has always said legal should enable business. And that's how he sees the legal department. And it's great because it constantly reminds me not to be that no person. I think compliance is also another key area for a successful business. Non-compliant business will never see long-term success. They may see that short-term boost in profits, but it's not going to last long. And I think there's also an opportunity to utilize in-house legal departments to educate clients on risk. Some clients don't even have their own in-house counsel, and others are just not up to date with staffing-specific legal nuances. Sharing information and educating each client is definitely a win-win situation.
It's interesting that you say that, because sometimes even when I would get an edit back, let's say to a press release, we're not always thinking about, you know, maybe a specific stakeholder would think of it this way. So it is nice when you think of it as like a trusted partnership and have that kind of back and forth relationship where it isn't always no, and it may not always be yes, but it's certainly a conversation and a discussion to be had. Now, you had a little bit of a different course coming into the in-house world from an attorney's perspective. But I often hear, and again, going back to my husband, he mentors a lot of people graduating from law school and those who have gone to firms and now they're looking to go in-house. And it can be a challenge sometimes to make that change. It's a whole different mindset. So for someone, I guess, looking to go in-house and specific to breaking into the staffing industry, maybe you could share from your perspective some of the things that really excited you, I guess, in coming into the industry from your perspective that you feel like are great challenges that someone would actually enjoy and why they should consider coming in-house here.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, again, first things first, to fully enjoy and be successful in staffing, you need to be passionate about people. Doesn't matter what your role in the company is. You just really have to be passionate about people. This is a people business. If we do our jobs well, we give people their livelihood, sense of job satisfaction, and fulfillment in their work. And that's a pretty powerful purpose. I personally find the staffing industry very unique and thus fascinating. It's not like a typical company that sells widgets where things tend to be a tad bit straightforward. We work with various types of contingent workers and place them on our clients' sites. The employer-employee relationship is quite complicated. And you can just, you know, imagine how complicated it gets when you're actually doing employment law and working with employment law-related matters. In staffing, you also have to deal with VMSs and MSPs, which further complicate the customer relationship. It can be very challenging, and it's definitely not straightforward, which I find, again, challenging, and it makes it interesting for me to go into work on a daily basis. As for going in-house at a staffing firm, I think you need to be flexible, commercially minded, and be able to balance risk and reward, like we discussed earlier. I was lucky in that staffing fell into my lap, but if anyone listening to this podcast is interested in a career in staffing law, I'm happy to share my network.
Oh boy, you just opened it up. When we get to the end, we'll get your contact information and share that out. So I'd like to shift for a minute now over to, you know, obviously this is an Executive Women in Recruitment podcast and it is meant to benefit everyone, but there's something that you and I have been talking a lot about in the past and actually attended an event last week where Teresa Carroll, who was the former president with Kelly Services, talked about this. And it's a book called How Women Rise and the 12 Habits Holding Women Back from Their Next Raise, Promotion, or Job. I highly encourage people to read the book. And I guess I want to ask you, Samira, what is the one thing that you stopped doing? So again, it talks about these habits that women do that hold them back. What is the one thing you stopped doing that helped you advance?
So I don't think I've actually stopped doing it. I've at least recognized them as being habits and I'm working on it. So it's actually habit number one and two, and they tend to go together. So habit number two is waiting for others to notice my achievements and reward me accordingly. And habit number one is reluctance to claim my achievements. I struggle with both of those habits the most. I come from a very conservative and traditional family and was taught never to boast or speak of my achievements. I was told that if I do good work, others will notice and give me praise. You know, to this day, I still cringe every time I have to go through my list of achievements, whether for a promotion or a performance review or for this podcast. You know, in my career, I've always waited for others to notice my contributions and then promote me. But I'm learning that I need to be my own champion and that there's nothing wrong with asking me for what I think I deserve. It's actually quite empowering.
Well, I will say one of the key reasons we launched this podcast was really to help give women a voice and for the world to kind of hear all of the wonderful leaders we have in our industry and to have women feel comfortable sharing their stories. I mean, it, at all levels, it can be a struggle, but it's really important to do. And we always say, if you can't see it, you can't be it. So putting yourself out there and really building that kind of brand recognition and sharing what you're working on is so important. So I appreciate you doing that. But that said, speaking of speaking and doing the podcast, you shared with me when we first met about a story where you were asked to speak at an industry conference and your first reaction was to say no. And not for reasons like me. I'm trying to just say no more because I say yes all of the time, which is one of the things from How Women Rise as well. But you said no because you weren't 100% sure that you were comfortable doing it. And I can say, Samira, with 1,000% confidence that conference organizers, they often struggle to find female speakers for the exact same reason you were going to say no. And as you know, I co-founded a group called ARA, which is Attract, Retain, and Advance Women in Technology. And we would always have trouble finding women to speak because they just weren't confident. And we would, you know, prep them and help coach them. And they just were afraid, well, what if I say something or what if I can't remember this? So we'll coach and help them. And after they do it once, they certainly feel comfortable doing it again. So we're coaching women to say yes, get your voice out there, build your personal brand. And just again, remember for that next generation, they need to be able to see and hear from you. So maybe you can tell us that story about when you really wanted to say no, but the outcome and advice you have for others kind of facing their own similar fears.
Yeah, no, definitely. So when I was first approached to speak at SIA's Collaboration in the Gig Economy Conference, I was going to say no. I didn't think I had anything interesting or informative to share. However, when I discussed the opportunity with our US EVP, Morgan Cavanaugh, he gave me the confidence to say yes. He told me I was an expert in my field and that he wasn't going to force me, but thought I would do a great job. And I sat back and I thought about it and I thought, well, you know what? Okay, I'll do it. And in fact, he even offered to be in the audience and that put him down. No, I straight up said no to that. I said, nope, that's okay. I got this. And so afterwards, I remember seeing him after the conference and he had this smile on my face and he asked how it went. He already knew it went well and he knew I thoroughly enjoyed the experience, which, you know, I did. He gave me the confidence I didn't have, and speaking at the conference allowed others to see what Morgan saw, that I am an expert in my field. And now I'm being approached by others to share my knowledge and advice. So saying yes has really changed my outlook and has done amazing things for my career just in the past year. I would recommend reading Year of Yes by Shonda Rhimes if you haven't already done so. Another book I would recommend is Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. It's an older book and parts of it I know are controversial, but it was the first time I heard the term imposter syndrome. I didn't realize that was a thing. I didn't realize there was a term to the way I felt. I didn't realize I wasn't the only one. So reading that book was just a huge change. It brought about a huge change in my life. It was such an eye-opener.
Well, I will say, like, just speaking of confidence in that, it is a huge change when you finally say yes and you go out and you do it, it can make a really big difference. And being your own career champion, so just as much as you want to be your champion of having that be your year of yes and going out and doing different things, it's also really important to just be your own champion. And it's interesting because you had mentioned the first two habits as we were talking about the How Women Rise book. You know, this goes hand in hand with that, having confidence and being your own champion. So more often than not, women are often overlooked for promotions or don't perform as well on performance reviews because they're not always proactively championing themselves. So we're sharing into other individuals and team successes, but often just wait to get something handed to us. And you mentioned that earlier as being one of the things that you did. So I guess maybe what you could share with others listening is in your own career path where you had to really step up and do something to be your own champion, or what do you see in others? I often hear this trigger, well, so-and-so just got this promotion or so-and-so just got that raise. And I immediately go to, well, you need to step up if you're deserving of it and come to why you should have it and have, you know, some research and background with that. But what advice would you have for others to ensure they're just not sitting back and waiting?
Yeah. So without getting into all the little details, I've definitely had to be my own champion. There's no way I would be where I am today if I didn't. There's just no way. You can't just sit back and just wait for somebody to recognize you. I've learned that. But it did help to have strong supporters throughout my career. For those starting out, my advice would be to build trust, show people that you're what you're capable of, and then lean on and learn from those that have more experience. Once you have a little bit of experience under your belt and have had notable accomplishments, you will then be equipped to be your own champion. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of supporters cheering you on. So I think it's important to actually have that little bit of experience, have something in order for you to be your own champion. So once you've established yourself, I think it'll get much easier.
I agree. And it's great, even, you know, being part of the mentoring program, which we met through, it's one thing to have kind of that internal champion at your company to help you, but it's also wonderful to have kind of a partner in a mentoring sense who you can lean on, whether it's peer-to-peer mentoring or, you know, more of the traditional sense of mentoring. But I'm a big, big fan of it. I've even helped launch mentoring programs. I had a mentoring company with ARA, as well as helping the Chicago Innovation Awards mentoring program. And obviously, as we met through ASA, participate in their program. And I've also really benefited from strong mentors in my life, which is why I spend so much time doing it today. That said, people often say they want a mentor, but aren't sure where to find one or how to ask. So I guess, have there been mentors in your career who have helped you along the way? And how did you approach it today? What advice would you have for others seeking it?
So I too am a huge fan of mentoring, and I'm so thankful for ASA's Mentoring Match program, because obviously it matched the two of us together, and I've learned so much from you. It's truly been an exceptional experience. But one thing I've learned about mentoring is that organic mentoring tends to last much longer and goes much deeper. Obviously, ASA's mentoring program is the exception. In the past, I've asked individuals to become my mentors, and it was very awkward. And while they agreed and we had a couple of conversations, with time, the connection just died out. However, I've come across other individuals whom I never formally asked to be my mentors, and they check in and provide advice on a continuous basis. Today, most of my mentors are not formal mentors. I don't think they even realize they're my mentors. They share their experiences and provide guidance to me on a variety of different matters. I even consider my managers at S3 my mentors. So really, essentially, anyone you can learn from can be your mentor. You don't need to have a formal relationship. Now, sometimes with certain programs, like you mentioned, ASA, ARA, those are great places to start, but definitely you don't have to have that in order to have a great mentorship.
Yeah, I agree. That's actually, it's a really good point you bring up, Samira, because if you don't know how to ask for it, and or you're not really surrounded by people you would necessarily, which would be a really sad situation, but not want to learn or grow from, having a program actually can be really helpful, especially if you kind of lack that confidence or self-esteem to do something like that. So being part of a program could help for you as well. But I agree with you wholeheartedly, having those relationships, even if it's just asking for help or advice from someone, can go a really long way. It does not have to be a formal relationship. I will say, though, from the programs that I've been a part of, I've always stayed in touch with the mentees. I would say, I mean, for the most part, and have really longstanding relationships with them and check in, which has been great. And I get to meet friends like you in the industry. So it's wonderful to be a part of and to do both. And I guess the biggest thing for me is just not to be afraid to ask. I just moderated a panel on this topic last week for a company, and someone on their team, an up-and-comer, just said, you know, I'd just love to learn from you how you decided to go out on your own. One day I want to be an entrepreneur. Would you mind if I bought you a, you know, virtual coffee just to talk? And it's the beginning of what I'm sure will be a really nice friendship and long-term relationship. To your point, it doesn't always have to be through a formal organization. So thank you.
That's right. And so, you know, I want to go back and kind of mention that when I did ask those people, it was not through a program. It was just me awkwardly going to somebody and say, hey, can you be my mentor? And that just never works.
All right, well, let's close out here. And I'd love to reflect, just kind of going back on the past few months. And you and I met right before that and have been able to have a lot of our, you know, Zoom calls through these conversations and doing checkpoints on how each other's doing. And there have been undoubtedly incredible acts of kindness and generosity and connection and hope within our communities. So my first question for you would be, professionally, what can you, or what will you take forward from this that will help you thrive later?
The word grateful keeps coming to mind. Professionally, in the midst of all that's happening around us, I'm so grateful for being able to do what I love in an industry that I love.
Fantastic. Grateful is a wonderful word. And personally, what has been your silver lining?
Spending quality time with my family. Pre-COVID, our weekends were all about running from one activity to another, catching up on housework. But now there's no activities, there's no commute time. We actually have time to play board games and sit outside in the backyard and grill. Even though work is busier than ever, I feel like family life has slowed down enough to finally be enjoyed.
It's so true. I last weekend was thinking about that same thing where we would have been rushing off to swimming and then baseball and hockey, still right now doing hockey year round. And we don't have all of those activities. So our activity Saturday and Sunday after we go for a little family run is our 4-year-old son Grayson gets the hose out and chases mom and dad and has a lot of fun laughing. And we just get to slow down and laugh with him a lot more.
Like, exactly.
It's a little challenging during the week, having everyone here, but you're absolutely right. On the personal front, it has allowed us to slow down and enjoy that family time. So thank you for sharing that so much. And Samira, you offered it up front. So I've got to ask you again, how can people get in touch with you? Whatever is the best for you, if it's LinkedIn or email, however you'd prefer to share.
Yeah, I love meeting new people and would love to hear from your audience. Best way to reach me is on LinkedIn. If there's anything I can ever do to help anyone, I hope they reach out.
Excellent. Thank you so much again for being our guest.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
I know, it really was. And I'm so just again, thankful that we were able to connect in this wonderful industry of ours and to be able to share your story with our viewers. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Edge. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to it in iTunes. Feel free to email Leslie at lvickery@clearedgemarketing.com and let us know if you have questions, would like to be a guest, or suggest a potential guest, or share topics you'd like to see in the future.